The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome one, welcome all. It is the Monday after the divisional round of the 2020 NFL season. We are Monday Football Monday. This is the SB Nation NFL show where you get all of the best football discussion throughout the land. Make sure you subscribe to the SB Nation NFL show, available on all major podcast platforms. Leave a rating, write a review. If you do, I promise you, you will get a dual hug from Michael Kist and Pete Sweeney, who are joining me here as they always do.
That's right.
Every Monday. Boys, there are four teams left. Jim Nantz is going to give his tie to the best performer from the conference championships. I think that's the routine when it comes to four teams left in the winter, spring, whatever you want to call it. But Kist, welcome to the Final Four.
Oh, man. What an exciting time to be alive. The games mean so much. And wow, I really do think, and we're going to talk about this, that we were robbed of two of the, I guess, most snake-bitten franchises in the Browns and Bills going at it. I think the universe was like, we can't have that much sadness and so on in one single game. So we were spared of that. But I'm excited for the rest of the games, man. I'm excited to talk about what happened this weekend.
We have four winners to talk about, Pete. The Cleveland Browns, not among them, but the Kansas City Chiefs certainly are. You do a great job of covering the Chiefs for ArrowheadPride.com. Lots of concern, obviously, this week around Patrick Mahomes. We will get to him among everybody else. Was it a stressful Sunday for you?
I wouldn't say stressful. It was fun. I enjoy...
The Slack messages certainly disagree with that, Pete.
Did you hear the way Pete said that? It was fun.
Yeah, it was a fun divisional round Sunday, if you will. There was a certain point in this game, and I know we're going to get into it, so I don't want to spoil it here, but there was a real, I think, feeling that the Browns had a chance to pull this off, and they weren't able to do so, and that's a credit to the Chiefs defense. Again, I'm sure we're going to get more into it.
Oh, we will. We are going to get into all of the games that happened, all of the wonderful matchups, all of the good times, all of the takes. Before we do, though, we have seen multiple teams obviously fill their NFL head coaching roles. And by the way, if you want to stay updated on everything happening in the NFL, make sure you listen to our new daily show here on the SB Nation NFL show feed. We give you all the updates from around the league in a nice bite-sized episode to start your day off with your coffee, your eggs, your muffin, if you maybe eat something different. I mean, I don't approve of that, but whatever. Anyway, we found out just as the divisional round ended that the Los Angeles Chargers are the latest team to get their head coach. They are getting somebody who is rather local to the area, Los Angeles Rams defensive coordinator Brandon Staley, who was in the mix for all of these jobs, basically. Kist is the new man in charge of Justin Herbert's career. Do you like the hire?
Yeah, I do like the hire. The Eagles had interest in him, and I thought he would have been an interesting hire. Always with, you know, defensive hires, you do worry about the fact that their offensive coordinator is going to get poached somewhere. I am interested to see what the Chargers do with their current offensive coordinator. I'm not going to butcher his name. You can wiki it, but Steven something or other, Stein something, whatever. It looks like they want to keep him because Justin Herbert reportedly loves him. So yeah. I think that's something to watch for. I think Staley's a really interesting name. Young guy. He's only 38 years old. And like the guy was a grad assistant in 2012. How much have things changed in the league where they're going towards these young coaches now? I thought he did a fantastic job with the Rams. I'm not in the same league as some people that think that he was just a product of having Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald. Of course, that always helps. I thought his scheme was innovative. I thought it was creative. And I think that's what teams should be looking for when they bring in a new hire like that.
Pete, it is a bit rare in today's NFL, as Kist kind of alluded to see teams prioritize the defensive side of the ball in terms of the head coach that they hire oftentimes, especially in cases like this where you have the young quarterback. You generally see teams wanting to lean into that and steer into the ice, so to speak, but not the Chargers. They skidded the other way.
I like the way that the Patriots and the Chiefs, I know you're going to roll your eyes, RJ, but I like the way that they're set up in the sense of...
What does that have to do with the Chargers?
Andy Reid takes care of the offense, similar as Bill Belichick takes care of the defense. And what they do when the offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator roles, respectively, is you're almost a pseudo head coach. So I think sometimes this storyline is overblown, where it's, you have this fantastic young quarterback, defensive head coach. No, he can hire someone that's an offensive coordinator to take care of that. And I think you're seeing a little bit of a trend here with now these young defensive head coaches, and we'll see what happens. I'm thinking about Robert Saleh in New York as well, and trying to figure out the Sam Darnold problem. And so it's exciting. I always like the turnover. Again, we'll see who's successful and who's not.
The New York Jets do have a new head coach, as Pete mentioned. Kist, you mentioned the Philadelphia Eagles. At the time of this recording, the Detroit Lions have not made the Dan Campbell hiring official, but it is heavily expected that that will be the case, which means that there are only two remaining teams in the NFL that are looking for head coaches, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Houston Texans. Needless to say, the two biggest dumpster fires in the NFL at the moment.
That's a fact.
The Texans have somehow passed the Eagles. Like, yes. What a blessing that is in Philadelphia that... The Houston Texans are, without a doubt, the biggest garbage fire in the league right now, and the biggest garbage fire we've seen in years, really.
When Doug Peterson was fired, I said that the Eagles job was the least desirable job out there, and even with the Eagles story coming about Carson Wentz, with Jeff McClain writing it up, doing a great job with that piece, the piece by Jack about Jack Easterby was almost even more damning. I think Pete's right. Like, the Texans have somehow bumbled their way behind the Eagles in terms of desirability. It's wild.
To that point, Kist is mentioning the SI report on Jack Easterby from the weekend, which was the second deep expose that Sports Illustrated has done on the Jack Easterby situation and the Texans over the last like 6 weeks. So both those teams had huge exposés done about them over the weekend. Never a good sign. The time has come, boys, to discuss the divisional round. We're going to moonwalk our way through this. We're going to go from the last game and go backwards all the way to the first game because we're feeling that way this particular Monday morning, which means we are starting with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They defeated the New Orleans Saints 30-20. It was reported before this game started by Fox's Jay Glazer that it would be Drew Brees' last game in the Superdome. I don't think this was shocking to anybody. It's been heavily speculated that he would retire following the season. He's obviously got the job at NBC lined up, but adding that level of finality to it kind of increased the stakes in a weird way, and ultimately made the end kind of sad. Like, football Twitter was really sad about this, just because it's not fun to watch a great go out in kind of a whimpering way, which is kind of what happened to Brees. Kist, I feel like you have some heat to spew here on Drew Brees, or maybe you're in a delightful mood yourself. I really don't know.
I mean, I don't understand how you have an intended air yard average of 5.4 yards and throw three interceptions like Drew Brees did. I think it being his last game made it impossible to bench him, but it was very clear over the last couple of weeks when the Saints wanted to take shots, they had to do it with somebody else. Last week it was Taysom Hill. This week it was Jameis Winston, which, by the way, is a fantastic troll job by Sean Payton, having Jameis Winston come in against the Bucs and throw a touchdown in a playoff game. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I think, you know, you talk about bringing things down. Let's bring things up with some heat between the Bucs and the Saints, with Carlton Davis, the corner from Tampa Bay, calling Michael Thomas slant boy after Thomas gets blanked. Four targets, zero catches, nada. And the Bucs were talking big smack about it. I love these young corners for the Bucs, and I love the swag. So I was a big fan of this game. It kind of ended in a whimper. Like, it wasn't the way you wanted to go out if you're Drew Brees or the Saints. But, like, I mean, what else did you expect? This is exactly what I was telling you guys about all year. They're going to get to the playoffs. They're not going to be able to throw the ball downfield in a game, and they're going to get burnt on it. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I agree. I think in a game that was billed Brady versus Brees, again, they weren't really the story. The last time I remember it had been a blowout. To me, the story was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. And
Devin White!
Yep. With the Bucs defense playing like that, I think it gives them a real fighting chance to beat the Green Bay Packers, which I'm sure we're going to get into throughout the week here on the SB Nation NFL show. I think we all collectively, included, you guys included, everybody, we all owe Tom Brady an apology for like making fun of the TB12 diet and Alex Guerrero and, oh, he's bringing in his own coach into Bill Belichick's room. Like, Bill Belichick's at home right now. He joined a new team and has found himself in the NFC Championship, and they haven't been to such a game in, what, 18 years or something like that. And Brady wasn't particularly impressive in this game, only 199 yards and two touchdowns. But he's just way more serviceable than Drew Brees, who is younger than him by 1 year. And he's been good in recent weeks, too. And Brady looks good enough to me to get to the Super Bowl. And so that's a result of him taking care of his body. Of course, he put himself in a really good situation with a lot of good weapons. But again, to me, the run game, Leonard Fournette, and the defense was the story for the Bucs, and congratulations to them. Let's see how they can do in the frozen tundra with that thinned blood from the Tampa weather, baby. Another storyline.
I think you mentioned the difference between Brady and Brees. One quarterback looks like a guy that had major reconstructive, you know, shoulder surgery years ago, and the thing just can't go anymore. Like, if Drew Brees was going to go into Lambeau, I think his arm was literally going to fall off. Tom Brady, you know, you mentioned the stat line too. He had the I don't know if you want to call it a drop necessarily. It was a really tough catch, but he put in a beauty to Chris Godwin, who just wasn't able to secure it, you know, and survive the ground and everything like that. The big difference between them is Brady still has a deep ball. And even when people were saying he didn't have one last year, you saw his weapons there. I think it's obvious that Brady can still push the ball down the field, and that gives the Bucs a fighting chance, especially like you said, with their defense playing like that.
And fair to say, just quickly here, and it's something that can't be overlooked, is we're what, still 8 weeks since Brees had a punctured lung and 11 cracked ribs. Sure. And I think that didn't help. But even still, it feels like it's time. So the NBC reports make sense surrounding Brees.
I have a bit of a take here. And I know the Brees thing is like, it's kind of sacrilegious, I guess, to say anything negative about him. But Pete, you're right. Like, it's what Tom Brady's done is remarkable, incredible. I don't think anybody is disputing that at this point. And I believe that you make your own luck a lot in the NFL. And I think you also have luck. But I also think, I mean, like, let's consider who the Bucs have beaten to get here. Like, it's not this like murderer's row of playoff teams that they've gone through. I know you have the dub FT thing. But speaking of, Taylor Heinicke, I think, is a more abled quarterback today than Drew Brees. And that's who the Bucs got to play with a ticket to the title game on the line. And to the whole point here, and I think it's important to know, and the same thing is going to be done this week. It's going to be Rodgers versus Brady and all this stuff. The Saints' possessions after halftime, they had the touchdown, the nice Drew Brees pass, what might be his last touchdown in the NFL, fumble, punt, interception, interception. People have talked so much over the last like 10 years about these quarterbacks who are playing into their 40s and how amazing it is, and it's true, but they all also hold on just a bit too long. Like, Peyton Manning was very fortunate that he was able to win the Super Bowl and not have the washed kind of be the story, but the washed is the story for Brees and the Saints. I mean, I think it's fair to say that the Saints have indisputably one of the best rosters in the NFL, but they are arguably more trapped by their quarterback than maybe any other successful team in the league.
Yeah, and I mean, they did. Not anymore, because as soon as they lost this football game, now you have a team that's $80 to $85 million over the salary cap. It was all or nothing, and you're going to have, you know, we talk about reconstructive surgery of a human being, of this roster. And I tend to think that this team's going to look very, very differently the next time we see it.
This isn't breaking news, but we are very authentic with our audience as we record. Something important, something to watch on the head coaching front as we move on. According to Tom Pelissero, the NFL has granted clubs permission to conduct virtual interviews this week with head coaching candidates who are still in the playoffs, provided the employing club consents. Ooh. Notable for the likes of Eric Bieniemy and Todd Bowles, obviously. And according to Pelissero, Kist, I'm sure you're aware of this, Todd Bowles interviewed with the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday. Congratulations to Todd Bowles. Did a great job coordinating that Buccaneers defense. Not the tallest task in the world because Brees is somewhat washed. But let's move on to Eric. Oh, go ahead, Pete. You had a final thought here.
No, just a point off of that. At least in Kansas City, and I know we're about to get into the game, Andy Reid wants Eric Bieniemy to get a job so badly this year. There has been information out that teams are interested in potentially hiring Mike Kafka, the quarterback's coach, for that job. Andy Reid desperately wants him, the train to keep on moving here. And I think that's part of it, too. Kafka probably isn't ready to be a head coach, but he's ready now to be an offensive coordinator. He's been Patrick Mahomes' quarterback's coach until then. And this is really stopping that train. And I think we all know that Bieniemy or believe he deserves a job. So I'm praying and hoping that this helps him get the Texans or Eagles job.
I agree. And I know I trash Bruce Arians a lot, but he has gassed up Todd Bowles for a long time now. Gassed him up in Arizona, I think helped lead to him getting the Jets job at the time. So hopefully these are the two people who get the final two coaching jobs in the NFL. Although I don't want to wish the Texans or Eagles jobs on anybody. So I kind of am in a weird middle place there. But okay, let's move on. The Kansas City Chiefs survive beating the Cleveland Browns 22-17, the final score. Patrick Mahomes, as everybody is well aware, was injured on Kansas City's second possession of the second half. Had been a bit gimpy prior to that, kind of nursing the ankle situation. And I think immediately everybody thought that that might have been the case. But obviously, we found out very shortly after, thanks to CBS, it was a concussion for Patrick Mahomes. He was not somebody that returned to the game, as we've seen sometimes throughout the NFL. Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, by the way, we'll get to in a little bit, both left their games with concussions and did not return, the reigning MVP and the one before him. But Pete, there was an era of holy crap, this is possible for the Browns to pull it off. They did not. Another one possession victory for the Chiefs.
You live and die by your quarterback in the NFL, and especially when you have who a lot of people would consider the best player in the world at the quarterback position. He leaves the game. The Chiefs were only up by five because of some kicking issues in this game, with their kicker missing what was a 33-yard field goal. So Baker Mayfield, who to me toward the end of the first half started cooking, in a sense. He looked pretty good, and he felt like a guy that could take his team down the field and go score on the Chiefs, and that would have left it up to Chad Henne to get in field goal range to either win the game and keep the season alive. And the Chiefs defense stepped up, and then they ended up punting around midfield. I'm sure you guys left some takes on that at 4th and 9. And they never got the ball back because of what Andy Reid was able to do play design wise and with that 4th and 5 play. I do want to note that in all of these games this weekend, there were key injuries really across the board. The Saints, we had mentioned that Breeze had an injury. We had mentioned that Lamar Jackson had to leave the Baltimore game, and the LA Aaron Donald was dealing with some stuff. Jared Goff, one team overcame their major injury, and it was the Kansas City Chiefs. And for that, it was Henne. And the hashtag going around right now is anything can happen. Anything is possible. And for that, we give him the hashtag come up of the week. Congratulations to Chad Henne. He said he's only on LinkedIn last night. We need to show him how to make a Twitter later today.
Wow. A double award for Chad Henne, because he is my yeet of the week. And I want to remind people, the yeet of the week isn't necessarily the best throw of the week, but he put some intentions behind this one. The throw on 1st and 25 after the kick block, which was called a crackback block on Ricky Seals-Jones, an abysmal call from where I was sitting. And look, for Henne, you cannot make that throw. It's an arm punt on 1st and 25. I don't know. I mean,
this was an interception. The yeet of the week. This is the first time the yeet was an interception, I believe, right?
That's correct, because of the chutzpah.
That's an honor.
He saw immortality down the field. But hey, look, he made up for it, man. That run on 3rd and 14, even though he was short, set them up in a position to go win the football game. And Romo noted it on the broadcast. It was unbelievable. I never thought the Chiefs were going to snap this, despite how aggressive I know Andy Reid is. Just the body language, like the Chiefs sold it so well pre-snap.
It was fourth and inches play. That was a new level of NFL trickery, because they gave the impression that they were going to fake snap as you got down to one, call a timeout, and then maybe think about it. It caught everybody off guard when they snapped the ball at 5 seconds. And I think because they snapped it at that point in the play clock, that's why it was successful for the first down and win. And you saw it on Baker Mayfield's face. I actually, I cover the Chiefs. It's nice to see them win and get to cover what is another conference championship game. But you felt for the Browns, and I think there was a real feeling that they could get back in this game at that point.
I don't think anyone's disputing the level of stones on Andy Reid and the incredible accomplishment hosting 3 straight AFC championship games and the Eagles connection, all that jazz. Andy Reid's amazing. I don't want to bury the lead, but the lead is actually the Rob job that happened to the Cleveland Browns. So to set the scene, because I know Michael Kist is very passionate about this, the end of the first half, Baker is cooking, baking, I guess some would say, Pete. I can't believe you missed that. No big deal. Anyway, the score is 16-3 at the time, Kansas City. The Browns, Baker Mayfield gets his man in position. We're inside the two-minute warning. And the worst rule in the NFL comes into play. A player trying to be great, I think it's stupid that we penalize this, reaching for the end zone, fumbles through the end zone. It's deemed a touchback. The Chiefs, because they are amazing, are able to drive and get a field goal, a successful one at that, before the half ends. A 10-point swing. Michael Kist, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's the worst rule in football. I think that's very obvious. Anywhere else on the field, you fumble, you reach out for a first down or anything like that, and it goes out of bounds, and the defense doesn't recover. You get the ball where you fumbled it. I don't understand why this rule is so disproportionately harsh to the offense when the defense didn't recover the ball. This is not a turnover of possessions. You're not in your own end zone. This is not safety rules or anything like that. I think it's a dumb, terrible, nonsensical rule. That said, that's the rule. And Bill Belichick lets his players know very much that you are not to reach out at the goal line like that. So I'm not trying to absolve the Browns for trying to make a play and trying to be great. You know, like, yeah, they made the mistake. They know the rule. That's on you. The NFL's got to change this dumb rule, man. It's so out of whack with reality. People say, just don't fumble. Okay, cool. There'll never be a fumble again. Stop punishing it so disproportionately to what the defense did.
Yeah, I think you guys named the rebuttal for this. I mean, you didn't say, oh, there was a surprise that screwed the Browns. You said it was a rule that everybody knows. And you alluded to it, Kiss. Devin McCourty went online during this game and said every Bill Belichick player is saying don't reach it. Why is that? Because they know that it's the rule. It's a dumb rule, but it's a rule. It's not a surprise. Surprise, the Browns got no. And it was a heck of a play at the one-yard line. Granted, if it wasn't the one-yard line, it wouldn't have been a touchback. By Dan Sorensen. This is actually the same player that sniffed out the fake punt by Bill O'Brien in the Texans' last divisional round. So I've called him Divisional Dan ever since this play yesterday.
He stinks to me so much, but he just ends up making these plays, and it's
such
hard.
Key clutch plays from Dan Sorensen.
It's hard to hate him for it. And look, there was so much more that went into this game than just that. I mean, there were theatrics all over the place. You had Tyreek Hill pushing, I think it was his wide receiver coach, Greg Lewis. You had the Browns not going for the 2-point conversion to be down 9. I didn't get that one. There was no challenge on what I thought wasn't a catch at all. The Chiefs were smart to quick snap it and whatnot. The decision to run Mahomes after he already had the right issue with his foot or ankle, whatever the case right may be, that led to the concussion. I think Honey Badger had a chance at an interception at a point where it looked like the Browns were getting back into things. The unbelievable catch by Austin Hooper on 4th-and-2 with 11 right minutes to go. Like, it felt like the season was on the line right there, and the Browns needed that play, and they got it, and it started to feel like they were going to get back into it, but I never lost the sneaking suspicion that the Browns were just going to somehow tragically lose this, and for it to be 3rd-and-11, and you throw a swing pass, and yes, I get there was pressure in his face, and don't take the sack, and whatever the case may be, but to end your season on offense on a 3rd-and-11 swing pass and a punt. How depressing is that? Dear God, for the Browns, man. Browns fans do not deserve what they saw on Sunday.
I think a rewarding feeling as an NFL fan is the play that Chris Jones made on the 3rd-and-11 to force the swing pass, right? Because every Chiefs fan at home is saying, that's why we paid him, right? Like, that's a really satisfying feeling as a football fan. Pete, I want a yes or no answer here. The Cleveland Browns were the worst team in the division around of all 8.
No, unfortunately.
Are they a bottom 2 team?
I think
from
so.
The division.
Yes, okay. I would say yes.
Okay.
So I think that's fair. We can debate who maybe you want to put the Saints, just be the way downness of Drew Brees. Maybe, you know, Kiss and I have hated on the Rams at times. We'll get to them too. Just steering looking forward, and you mentioned it earlier. We will talk a lot about the conference championships throughout the week here on the feed. And I'm not trying to spit in the eye of the Kansas City Chiefs. And I know Patrick Mahomes left this game, but the Chiefs were the only team this weekend to not win by double-digit score or by multiple possessions, excuse me. And that came against one of the two worst teams throughout the weekend. They just, and that's been their thing. And I think they deserve all the credit in the world because you're right. They're very incredible at adjusting, right? This becomes a defensive game. All of a sudden we need Chris Jones to make a play, but they are a team that plays with fire. And I haven't been this excited for a game in a long time to watch the Chiefs and the Bills, because this isn't a fire. This is a monsoon mixed with a tornado, mixed with an earthquake. This is Sharknado.
But you look at you can't see the multiple possession things based on the weekend. You look at all of these.
No, and I know Mahomes
easily
gets hurt, and that changes the conversation totally. But they play down, I'm upset about it. They're so great. They should dominate people.
A pick six in the other AFC game completely would change that. That might have been an overtime game in the end zone. Then Green Bay, it was a late play. Same thing with Tampa Bay. I mean, all those could have been one possession games. This is a divisional round in the playoffs. Just because every other team won by multiple scores, any one of those games could have easily been by one score. And for what it's worth, RJ, and you always get on my case, I picked the Chiefs in this game, and I picked the Browns with the points, and I was right on both.
You did. We all, I think, were believers that the Browns would cover because everybody does against the Chiefs. And so that's all I'm saying, man. Like, you know, the Chiefs are, and I said this, we did a clubhouse after both days of action. By the way, shout out to Mo, our fantastic guest that joined Kyle Posey and I, said he was going to check out our shows here on the feed. So what's up, Mo?
Hi, Mo.
I said there, you know, when you were like a kid and you would go to dinner with your parents and you would get a butter knife and like go through the like crevices on your hand. You know what I'm talking about? Like you would spread your fingers out and like kind of like
very dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. That's who the Kansas City Chiefs are. Like that's it. Like, and maybe it's because they're bored. Maybe it's because they're that great, whatever, you know, you want to call it. And this game was impacted by injury, so not quite the same thing. And to Andy Reid's credit, he found a way through. And I respect the hell out of Andy Reid for controlling his fate instead of punting there at the end.
Fansky Browns, though, they have 11 wins and they were lacking a number one threat in this game and still, I think, put up a formidable effort. I don't think the Stefanski Browns are going anywhere. This is not the same old Browns. I think they're going to be back in the playoffs. You know,
you mean they're not fading. That's what you mean.
This isn't a one hit wonder type deal. Yeah, that's how I feel.
Baker Mayfield had an average intended air yards of 4.9 yards. They're obviously missing that wide receiver one in this game. They could not push the ball downfield. And that really hurt them, and they had to be perfect driving down the field on these long drives. And it's still unbelievable that they could get the job done once Henny came in there. And I don't think anybody really believed that they would.
Kissed. Here's the weird stat line, I think, of this game. Landry had 7 catches, but only 20 yards. And to me, in a little bit, like that is, they're missing that threat. I don't know if, you know, OBJ is necessarily the answer, but again, remains to be seen what they do in the offseason.
He's a PPR PPR king. I mean, that's kind of reverting back to what he was in years past. Just one question on this before we can move on. Pete, what is the status right now of Patrick Mahomes in terms of the concussion protocol? Right. How confident are you that he'll – like, okay, number one, just by the looks of it, I don't believe he should be able to pass concussion protocol, but right. I do believe he will pass
concussion
protocol.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, after the game – We're trying to, like, it seemed to me, start this storyline where Patrick Mahomes got the wind knocked out of him. But the problem they have on that is everyone on TV saw him basically wobbling to his feet, right?
Yeah.
And already this morning, Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, who is paid by the league, says he's in the concussion protocol, which takes it out of the Chiefs' hands. So as much as everyone wants to believe in Kansas City and elsewhere, okay, we're going to certainly get Mahomes and Allen, it really isn't up to any of the teams. It's up to these independent doctors at this point, and it's just a matter of whether or not Patrick Mahomes can pass the tests. Like, this is something that's finally out of his control. Mahomes seems to be able to overcome a ankle injury, toe injury in the game yesterday. Last year was like the dislocated kneecap or had these bionic. We'll see. I think we might be headed toward Allen versus Henny, and that's a very unpopular opinion in my location at the moment.
Well, for full perspective, for everybody listening, we are recording at about 10:30 a.m. Central Time. So just, you know, hedge Pete's answer with that important information. And that was a really rousing discussion, guys. So let's everybody back to your corners. let's get some water, some hydration, maybe get a snack, hit the charcuterie board. Pete was the only team to put a team on the CB this week. And he bet against the Bills and he failed galactically. Let's talk about it after we take a very quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Welcome back, everybody. We talked about it. Pete Sweeney has disrespected the Buffalo Bills more than anybody else throughout all the land. The Bills getting a divisional round win for the first time in 5,000 years, 17-3, the final score against the Baltimore Ravens. Reigning MVP Lamar Jackson had a bit of a rough go. I think Leslie Frazier deserves an immense amount of credit for how he handled this. Like Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson left this game with a concussion, did not return. I think a really cool moment after the game was well over near the airport, Lamar Jackson was seen autographing things for fans and signing a whole bunch. So very cool of Lamar. Certainly hope he gets well soon. Certainly hope we get to see him at full strength next year. Kiss, let's start with you, because you, like me and a lot of other people, have believed in the Bills, and their moment is here.
Yeah, and I mean, you touched on it too before we get to the Bills. It sucks for Lamar being knocked out of a game like that, just like it would have for Patrick Mahomes if the Chiefs were knocked out. Like, that's nobody wants to see that. That's not good for the league either. But and Lamar didn't play his best game, had the pick six. That was a great play by Teron Johnson, picking that off in a cover two zone. You got all curls. He was able to leverage his route properly, jump the route, watch Lamar's eyes and everything. That was a huge play in that game that really sealed it. The center for the Ravens, holy crap, what an awful, awful game. He was so bad that Harbaugh was saying that the wind, which was whipping around like crazy, was affecting their snaps. But, I mean, watch the snaps. There's no way that the wind did that. That was a lot on the center there. And speaking of the wind, like, I know some football guys. Remember after, like, the Rams-Patriots Super Bowl, and it was, like, 13-3, and, you know, football guys were like, bah, that was good football. That was old school, defensive, whatnot, so on and so forth. This thing was, what, 3-3 at the half, if I'm not mistaken? 0-3? In the first possessions. This is all in the first half. Missed field goal, punt. Field goal, punt, missed field goal, punt, field goal, end of half. Like,
right.
It stunk. I wanted that hour and a half of my life back because it was so bad. Now, ultimately, the game opens up in the second half. You get a little bit more excitement. Josh Allen heats up a little bit. I just think the Bills were too much for the Ravens. And who knows? With the way that the Chiefs played against the Browns offense, I still think these are very different offenses. If Mahomes plays, I am very glad that we at least have one conference that is not going to be concerned at all with establishing the run. These two teams are going to combine for like 80 to 100 throws. I think it's going to be an aired out type of affair, and I'm really looking forward to it, man. It's a super, super fun matchup. It's the matchup I think everyone should want. It's the most exciting potential matchup you can have literally in all of the playoffs, in my opinion, whatever configuration you want to make of these playoff teams.
Kudos to the Buffalo Bills and their defense for keeping Lamar Jackson and what is a three-headed monster now with Dobbins and Edwards contained enough to win the football game. I think that was one of the keys of the game. And this was my beef with RJ. Well, first of all, this is my first loss in the entire playoffs and my only loss at the moment. And second of all, when RJ says, oh, every other team won by two scores. No, this game came down to two plays. It was Lamar Jackson and the 12-point swing when he throws a 101-yard interception to Teron Johnson in the end zone. And then all of a sudden, instead of 10-10, it's 17-3. And then it was Lamar Jackson getting hurt with 8 minutes left, ending the game because Hundley couldn't throw a pass to save his life. And that was it. And so it could have been way closer. It could have went to overtime. Who knows? The Ravens might have advanced if things don't go that way. It was a bonehead decision by Jackson. It just didn't seem like he saw Johnson, came out of nowhere. And then it was almost like a Madden-like return where he went under and around all of these guys and somehow managed to get all the way to the other end zone. And so the Bills, they continue to win. They continue to look pretty good. I guess 206 yards from Allen was good enough. My thing with the Bills is I don't know if they have the firepower. Now, this is assuming Patrick Mahomes plays. Stephon Diggs is, to me, their only elite skill position guy right now, especially now that they don't have Moss going anymore. Like, Singletary, to me, is not that guy. Chiefs have a lot of firepower, and I do expect it to be a shootout. Again, if Mahomes plays, it's going to be a weird game if Henny ends up going in this. But it's exciting. I think that, truly, it feels like the best four teams are left, which is what you want at this point, right?
I agree with that. I would answer your your, I was going to say your Bills criticism, maybe your RJ criticism, with the idea that Josh Allen just refuses to lose. And it's a culture that he spreads throughout the Bills team. You know, I mean, why should he be penalized for the things that, that his team is doing? He's their leader. He's the guy guiding them. Right.
Pete wanted to criticize the Bills because of that dancing video at practice. Like, come on, Pete. Can we talk about
and
this?
And if Rodrigo had cleaned his specs in that game and made the field goal, it's a way different game at the end with the ball in Phillip Rivers' hands. Only need a field goal.
You bring up a kicker?
You have
there's a little schmutz on his specs.
You've compared the 2020 Bills to the 2017 Eagles a lot. I know BLG has done that at different times on the podcast as well. This did kind of feel like that 2017 divisional round win over the Falcons, right? Yes. Like just kind of hanging on, and then winning at the very end against a team that had a high offensive ceiling, at least at that time. And so, I mean, I think that's, like, we talk so much about Josh Allen, and was it his best game? No, I thought he was fine, though. And in fact, Josh Allen had the most amazing 60-yard incompletion I've ever seen in my life.
Was that when he was throwing away the screen? Because that was almost my yeet of the week.
Yeah, like, just this casual flick of the wrist that is like a nuclear bomb. But the Bills, I mean, we spend so much time talking culture and whatever. Sean McDermott does not get the appropriate amount of credit. What this dude has built is incredible.
Andy Reid tree.
Andy Reid does have the fast Andrew. We've talked about that a lot, but I just think, like, Josh Norman had a moment. I know the Bills didn't recover that fumble, but Josh Norman had the peanut punch moment, and like, that is just an idea that festers throughout the entire Bills locker, and it never feels like they're going to lose. And that's what that Eagles team felt like. It always feels like they're going to pull off something weird, something wonky to find a way to win. I don't know, but I agree with you. These are the four best teams. I'm really excited.
We keep talking about Josh Allen's performance. I think the fact that the wind was kicking so much, and it was obviously affecting a lot of different things, maybe not the snaps, but the field goal kicks, which Tucker could not figure out which way the wind was going to be going when he kicked it. I can't believe he hit two posts in a row. But in the passing game as well, and despite that, Josh Allen was averaging 10 yards in the air. Every throw was one of the highest totals of the week. He was still trying to push the ball down the field. I think the wind had a big impact on this. I think the Bills run away with this thing if it's not those crazy types of conditions. I think this offense is going to be hot. Again, next week, we'll see.
We know, and we're about to talk about the Packers, Devontae Adams is the best wide receiver in the NFL. Where does Stephon Diggs rank on that list? I think he's third. I mean, I think Tyreek Hill, granted he had the miscue that you mentioned, Kist, but Tyreek Hill's second, and a different type of receiver, certainly. But Stephon Diggs is incredible. And I mean, I don't know how he's worse than third.
Diggs actually, and again, this is someone who covers the Chiefs. He may be more impressive than both of those guys, because I feel like Adams and Hill can go into games, and sometimes defenses find ways to shut both of them down for periods, whereas Diggs, everybody knows that Diggs is their main weapon every single week, and every time you check the box score, it's 107, mm-hmm. 112, 114. 8 catches. And I mean, this is the ultimate chip on your shoulder guy. He felt that way in Minnesota, knew he had a bad quarterback, and he wanted out because he felt like his career was being wasted. And this was the typical story where, man, disgruntled receiver, he's going to go somewhere else and stink. And he bet on himself. And to me, I think he might be number one.
He bet on Josh Allen, too. And look, find somebody that loves you like Stephon Diggs loves Josh Allen, because that relationship is really, really good, man. They are on the same page.
I am sort of hoping for a Bills-Bucks Super Bowl, just because the Bills having to go through Tom Brady to win a Super Bowl feels right in some senses. But I do think that the Bills-Packers, no offense, Pete, would be the best possible game, especially given the current status of the Chiefs, which is questionable from a health perspective. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes is amazing.
Yeah, I think it's clearly Chiefs and Bucks, because you want to be able for the new king of the league to be able to take it from the old one. And I just think that would be a perfect ending to a really great football season.
See, I think that that's misguided because I think, and this is a perfect segue, the current king of the NFL is Aaron Rodgers. There's no doubt about this. Aaron Rodgers
isn't the reigning Super Bowl champ. You're 100% remarkable. Right.
And was remarkable in this game, the Green Bay Packers defeating the Los Angeles Rams. A weird score, 32-18. It didn't totally feel like a blowout, but kind of felt like a blowout. Never felt like the Rams were super in this game, I thought. But the first game is always kind of weird, kind of, you know, whets your appetite in that capacity. Kissed. Packers did it again. The Rams did it again, too. I mean, what's news here?
I didn't really care for this game. I wasn't really excited about it. I mean, honestly, I thought Aaron Rodgers was
in control. Did you want to watch any game this weekend, Kissed?
I thought Chiefs Browns was super interesting. I thought Bills Ravens could have been good if it wasn't for that doggone win. I mean, there were a lot of different factors in there. I had some fun, but not in this one. I mean, I think it was pretty clear who the better team was throughout the entire game. And Kevin Clark of The Ringer had tweeted this out a few days back, and I thought it was interesting. He said, quote, "An opposing player once told me the most frustrating thing about playing Aaron Rodgers is how much fun he has. You're in the fight of your life trying to slow him down, and he's smiling like he's playing pickup hoops. They said it's incredibly demoralizing and makes everything slightly worse," end quote. You looked at Rodgers that entire game. You can tell when he's in the zone. He was out there having fun. He's playing some doggone good football. He's fully in command. This Packers offense is going to be tough to stop. I don't know if Tampa Bay can repeat their performance where they beat them 38-10, but they're going to need one of the best performances of the year yet again to slow this guy down, because right now he's an absolute machine.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the way that the Rams are built, if you're going to win these big games, you need a 100% ready to go Aaron Donald, and you need your top weapon or one of your top weapons in Cooper Kupp going. I think they were hurt by that. Goff actually, I think, did better than I thought he would. But if you're not clicking on all cylinders, you're not going to beat a team like the Packers, who is healthy, ready to go, and again has the MVP at quarterback this year. And so I think you saw that. I think they were just too much. They overpowered them, and it does lead to what I would consider a really, really exciting NFC Championship game. I'm thrilled that this game is actually first before the Chiefs, because I could really actually watch it. Sometimes when these games are after, it's impossible to watch. So you get the NFC Championship and then the AFC Championship next week.
A bunch of things here. First of all, Kissed and I have said for a while now that the Packers are going to win the NFC. Pete, you said the Rams would, so, well.
The Bucks. I said the Bucks.
Anyway.
Is this not what I said with the Rams? That they were going to get into the playoffs and their offense wasn't going to be able to do enough. And that's exactly what happened. Now we hear that McVay and Goff are at loggerheads about the health of Jared Goff and his thumb. I wonder why that is. So you have Staley leaving. You've right. got Goff and McVay really not seeing eye to eye. And I think everybody realizes what Goff is now. He's a guy that can look like a top five quarterback when the conditions are perfect around him. But when he gets under pressure, when he plays better defenses that make him think a little bit, he looks like a bottom tier quarterback. And overall, you're left with a very volatile average quarterback that I don't think is ever going to get you over the hump. And I'm fascinated to see how Sean McVay treats that moving forward. I can't be, I might not be this
really
year, but
I mean, I really thought we were going to get a potato for a brain.
We hit this on The Daily Show. In case you are unaware of the full context of the Goff-McVay situation, after the game, Sean McVay was asked if Jared Goff was his quarterback. And you can hear this on The Daily Show. He said, yeah, he's our quarterback right now. Mm. And he kind of doubled down in talking to reporters on Sunday as well. So a very interesting situation there. I don't know. I think it's fascinating that the Cowboys kind of butchered their quarterback extension situation with Dak Prescott, and Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, those deals both look horrendous. Maybe the Cowboys actually out. No, there's no way they outsmarted anybody. But I also think that the Packers pass rush has come a bit alive. Za'Darius Smith was a factor in this game, and I did a video for our YouTube channel over at Blogging the Boys talking about, because it is concerning, right? If you're a Cowboys fan, oh, the Packers have gone to back-to-back NFC title games since they fired Mike McCarthy. And I think the firing of Mike McCarthy was the break point for a discussion that the Packers had to have as an overall franchise, right? For years, forever, it was, we don't need to dip our toes in free agency except for Reggie White. We're fine. We're going to build through the draft. That completely changed, you know, in 2019 when they fired Mike McCarthy and hired Matt LaFleur. They went out and got Za'Darius Smith. They got Preston Smith. They obviously, you know, were fortunate in that all of their star players started playing. Like, I mean, they have arguably the best quarterback in the NFL at this moment. Sorry, Pete. They have arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL at this moment. And they have a top three running back. So all of their pieces are just kind of working and coalescing together.
Yeah, your instincts are right on that, RJ. Jared Goff per PFF was pressured on 40% of his dropbacks, despite the fact that he had one of the quickest release times at 2.3 seconds. If you're getting pressured 40% of your dropbacks and you're getting rid of it in 2.3 seconds, that pass rush is banging. And that's going to be big for the Packers when they go up against Tom Brady next week, because if they can consistently get to him, if they can get that 40% pressure rate again, and I really like the Bucs offensive line, but if they can do that, and the Packers really got a fighting chance. Pete, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to end up picking the Bucs here because my preseason prediction for the Super Bowl was Chiefs over Bucs, but it seems like the Packers might be the better team, and they're actually the most complete team and seem to be playing the highest quality in the NFC right now.
Yeah.
Would be surprised if the Bucs are able to overcome that. I think it should be a great game. I mean, I think it probably is the game that we wish we would have got from both of these contests in the NFC next week, which is exactly what you want on Championship Sunday.
Yeah, I do think we get a chance to kind of redo some really great games from earlier in the season. The Chiefs-Bills game did not deliver because of the rescheduledness because of COVID. And the Bucks-Packers game was just an all-time bad performance for the Packers, which, I mean, is fair, but, you know, it didn't give us as football fans the meat that we all ordered, right? Like, the steak came well done, and we didn't want it that way. But we are certainly looking forward to all of the action from conference. Oh, what, yeah, what no, do you got? What do you got, Pete? Hit
us. I have a quick question. I mean, because I know that RJ's become this Cowboys pseudo-Bills fan, so I'm going to say this to what are you going to do when Chad Henne knocks off your boy, Josh Allen, at Arrowhead Stadium next week?
I'll spin that into this question.
What?
Aaron Rodgers, again, and I'm considering Patrick Mahomes hurt right now. For this conversation, let's say Chad Henne starts. Josh Allen is easily the second best quarterback left standing, right? It's Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen.
Yeah.
But you get met with these, like, and I think that's what leads to the, like, oh, it's Brady versus Breeze discussion. Like, Tom Brady is remarkable. And you're right, Kiss. Like, the deep ball he threw to Chris Godwin that should have been a touchdown was incredible, like, especially for his age. But I people get so, like, locked in on the narrative of who it all is that they just can't see things like that.
Here's the narrative that matters to me. Look at the four quarterbacks that we're talking about here, because it's Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. How much do you think having an elite quarterback matters in the NFL? I mean, every year we see it. And even teams that sneak in without one, like a Jared Goff or a Jimmy Garoppolo, they end up losing.
That's why you can't blame McVay for saying what he's saying. And
right.
Kudos to him for not just lying through his teeth in the media and saying Jared Goff is our guy. Because if you can upgrade it, I mean, Goff might be on the other side of my personal cousin's line. And so if that's the case, you have to always be looking to upgrade that position. And so, yeah, I'm excited for next week. I hope we get Allen Mahomes, because I think the world deserves to see that matchup.
I think my last thing, Kiss, to piggyback off of your it helps to have an elite quarterback thing, I would also look at all four of these teams, and the Bucs are a bit of an exception in this regard. Team building never stops. Like, you can never just rest on your laurels. And I think the Saints kind of did this, you know, and they have one of the best rosters in the NFL. But to your point, Pete, like, that's a little bit maxed out now. But the Bucs went super, you know, wild in terms of bringing in all sorts of talent. The Packers, as I mentioned, saw kind of a philosophical shift in that regard 2 years ago. The Bills traded for Stephon Diggs and really doubled down on their quarterback. And the construction of that began 2 years ago as well, getting Cole Beasley in and all those decisions. And the Chiefs, they've never stopped. The Chiefs could have very easily said, because this is what other teams do when they find the quarterback, and said, okay, we're good. But they didn't, you know, and they doubled down in places that made sense, like Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Chris Jones, but they go out and get a honey badger and whatever. And that all helps the overall process.
Yeah, you can make a case that in the Chiefs game yesterday, the two best players for them were a fourth rounder and L'Jarius Sneed on defense, and an undrafted free agent running back named Darrell Williams. And, like, kudos to the Bucs, as you're saying, with the team building. Don't forget, this is a team in the final hour went and got Fournette. And a lot of people at the moment were like, do they really need to do this? Well, the answer yesterday was absolutely.
right? What was that?
And so it's never... You never stop, and I think that's a great point by you. First time for everything, Aaron.
Well, appreciate it. That's a great note to end on. Peace, love, harmony for all of us here on Monday Football Monday, hopefully for you. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review to the SB Nation NFL Show. We have all sorts of great content coming your way. Tomorrow we'll, of course, give you a daily update on the status, hopefully, of Patrick Mahomes and everything else going on around the NFL. Maybe the Texans and Eagles will have some new head coaches. And, of course, tomorrow, the Oddcast. If you get some time, you know, listen to the Oddcast. You know, that they work hard. So to devote that, you know, to them.
Doing their best.
For Michael Kist, for Pete Sweeney, I'm RG Ochoa. We love you. We will see you next week when we have a set Super Bowl.